The Outdoorsman Radio Show is brought to you by Ellis Outdoors, LLC. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis. Good morning, everyone. Alan Ellis here, and this is the Outdoorsman Radio Show, where we talk about fishing and hunting in the great outdoors. There's a lot of deer hunting there the last hour, which is good. We're going to switch gears a little bit. We're going to talk to Dave Sikorsky. Am I saying your name right, Dave?
Sir, you sure are.
Good, good, Dave. Dave is the executive director of the Maryland CCA. Is that correct, Dave? Did I say that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. CCA stands for Coastal Conservation Association, and you guys have been around a long time.
Yes. Yeah, in Maryland, we are looking at our 25th year next year.
Wow, great.
In the country, we're a nationwide nonprofit made up of recreational anglers that was first started in 1977 on the Texas Gulf Coast, and it was started by anglers and folks that worked all week and would head to the Texas Gulf Coast to recreate and hit the water and go fishing on the weekends. And they, when they would get there, they found less and less fish and started to become concerned. And so the story goes that 14 or so folks were hanging around a tackle shop one weekend and said, you know, we need to do something. We need to create an organization to represent recreational anglers and the resources that we care about. And, that small group of folks, they've grown to the largest tidewater recreational angling group in the country with over 140,000 members. And we're very similar to the Ducks Unlimited, Trout Unlimited, Delta Waterfowl, the various other groups that have banquet fundraisers throughout the year. And,
right.
And chapters, you know, lots of volunteers, lots of employees as well across the country that that work and keep an eye out on conservation issues. And we do youth fishing events, fishing tournaments. Of course, our banquet fundraisers, we just closed out our Greater Baltimore Chapters event last night, about 11 o'clock at night, got home.
And here you are in the morning. That's dedication, brother. That's dedication, that's for sure. How was your banquet attended, and did you meet your goal?
Absolutely. We had a great evening of generous folks enjoying themselves over at the Eastern Yacht Club in Essex, out looking out on the water and talking about the good work we do. And we do a lot of work on the advocacy or conservation front with our managers at DNR. I saw you at the meeting last week.
Yep.
I know you mentioned that now, and you know, it's a big part of what we do, but we were also sharing a lot of the great stuff we do with habitat and you know, the homes for the fish and crabs and oysters and such that are out in the Chesapeake Bay. We have a pretty neat program for that too. We'll probably get to talk about, but it was a great night. Great night of celebrating conservation and folks working together and adding some new members to our roles and what we do.
Let's talk about the meeting the other night. The meeting the other night was the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, who's basically the umbrella panel of folks representing Department of Natural Resources and others.
Yep.
To manage striped bass in the coastal states of the U.S. I think there's 13 states in Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, something like
15
that.
15 states.
15.
A Fish and Wildlife representative.
Right.
And a Natural Marine Fisheries or NOAA representative. So
right.
They do get federal involvement as well. And, yeah, it's a it was created with an interstate compact, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, and their website is asmfc.org.
Right.
So folks can check that out. And it's essentially the states had to figure out how to manage fish that migrate between all our borders and assess the stocks and use the best science available to try and understand what's out there. And and then decide how much can be harvested and what states get to harvest it. And so they, there are multiple management boards based on the different, or that, that made up of the different states that have the species share their waters. For striped bass, it's states from Maine to North Carolina that all have seats at the table, as well as our federal partners. And it's a great deal of science that goes into it, and a great deal of guessing in the assessing the stock and then determining what rules need to be in place with the states. And the ASMFC is, again, a cooperative body where the states agree to be part of it and have three representatives that sit at the table. It's run by Robert's Rules of Order, so folks and folks can actually listen in via webinar or attend the meetings. They happen five times a year, and there's always a different agenda posted, and folks can sign up for various lists. So the ASMFC staff, there's staff that lead each species and assist with each board and various levels of staff within the organization. They're essentially kind of neutral moderators that make sure that the board follows the laws that are set out and the policies that they enact. But ultimately, the boards are made up of a governor's appointee, a legislative appointee, and then the fisheries director for the state. So you really get two executive branch folks and then a legislative branch, and they can appoint proxies, and quite often do appoint a proxy to sit at the table and represent a certain sector in their state. And like everything, that'll change with elections and change with issues, and they really just dig deep into things that the average angler probably doesn't realize is happening to manage their resources, and most anglers are focused on going fishing instead of sitting through a lot of these meetings. So a big part of my world is just going to them and tracking it and making sure that we're on top of all the issues.
Well, I noticed that you did not stay long at the meeting. You were there for the initial probably, I don't know, half maybe. And you and I were in the same boat as far as wanting to depart. But I was there with Uncle Dale, who was in fisheries management for, you know, 32 years. And Dale was he was in charge of the Chesapeake Bay Finfish program. He was, of course, very interested in that, and that's fine. Dale actually worked with a number of the folks that spoke the other night. Mm-hmm. And we spoke, you know, we talked on the way home. I was riding with him and so forth. But we did meet some new people. But that being said, that meeting was to basically be a presentation and then solicit questions and comments.
Yes.
It didn't quite work out that way. Some members of the audience decided that they wanted to have their input in the middle of the presentation rather than wait to the end. Some members of the audience wanted to contradict the information. Some members of the audience wanted to argue and get into the numbers as they saw them. It was very distracting, quite frankly. And the meeting was overwhelmingly populated by Maryland's commercial watermen. There were a few charter boat captains there that I saw, but I didn't see a tremendous amount of recreational anglers attending this meeting, other than Dave Sikorsky. You may have seen some other folks there. There were other people there with agendas. And they're, you know, that came out during the comments period. I didn't envy Mike Luisi, because Mike is the Maryland Department of Natural Resources Fisheries and Boating Service employee. And he was, stepping in for somebody who actually should have represented the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission at that meeting and made that presentation. Am I portraying that accurately?
Yes, yeah. And that meeting was, so as part of the Atlantic States process, Mike does sit at the table for Maryland. And
sure.
He does work very, very hard. And Mike's also the chairman of the what's called the Mid-Atlantic Council, which is a federal water management body. So
Not taking anything away from Mike. He did an excellent job.
He's a great, great, great hardworking guy. And so ASMFC does manage state waters, and so the I didn't mention that yet, but that's within 3 miles out into the ocean, and of course all the coastal or the Chesapeake and its tributaries. But yeah, so the meeting was tough, and quite often these fisheries management meetings are. It was the second one of its kind, and the state decided to represent the ASMFC staff in Cambridge, because the ASMFC can only staff one meeting per state.
Right.
In fact, I believe there was another state where that ASMSC staff lead was on Wednesday or Thursday, whatever day it was. So there was also another meeting prior in Annapolis.
Right.
Where he led that. And there were quite a few recreational anglers there, as well as watermen and charter captains and interested citizens. And it quite often it can get a little heated, and especially in this case, because
sure, we're dealing with a target species for not only commercial watermen to make money on to catch. You know, they don't catch and release. We are dealing with a recreational fish for anglers to pursue, and they are abundant. But the issue is that, you know, when you fish for them in hot water, like we had this summer, you tend to get a lot of what they call dead discards or floaters, or, you know, when even if you catch and release, you're going to have some fish die just because of the fact that the water temperature is so high and they are so stressed. And then you have the charter boat business in the middle of that, which is a kind of a combination of the commercial and recreational. They service recreational fishermen, but, you know, they do it for money. So, good grief. Yep. Very, very complicated.
It is. And we have, you think about a striped bass, they're a long-lived species. They only spawn effectively or in a highly abundant way a couple times a decade, and that's kind of by natural design. The system can only support so many. Scientists will tell you that somewhere between 70 and 90% of adult striped bass spawn in the Chesapeake and the tributaries here.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's why we see so many. I mean, we see so many little fish because just billions are born. And year after year, the department tracks the young of year and the status of how many young fish are born. That goes into a stock assessment, along with surveys up and down the coast that are never perfect or difficult to make sure that we're doing it exactly the same way every year. They do some great studies on the spawning reaches and tag those fish, and we learn a lot about their migratory patterns and such. And they say striped bass is one of the most data rich species on the coast because it's in state waters. There's so many anglers and pursuing them, and there's somebody pursuing them 365 days a year in different parts of their range. And so with all these states sharing them, it's complicated enough on a coastwide basis. And yeah, when you boil it down into a sector versus sector in each state, it is complicated because each sector has their different interests. And, you know, recreational fishing, I'm glad you mentioned that the charter captains are recreational fishing. They're part of that sector as well.
Right.
Because, the simplest way to put it is I say that charter captains are like bus drivers. They're taking recreational anglers out to the fish, and Maryland has some really great captains out there, and generally they're pursuing a limit of fish and getting some folks back to the dock, and everybody's happy to take home some great fillets for dinner. And then you have some private rec anglers that do the same, and then all the way to folks that choose to never try and keep a fish. And yeah, like you mentioned, hot water is not good for catch and release.
That's right.
Yeah, it's and we have difficult oxygen situations in the Chesapeake in the summer, and it's really tough for management to figure out when to open and close seasons. And
sure
right now,
is.
We're facing an 18% reduction in harvest because not enough fish have been born, and we've continued fishing at a rate that is removing them at too high of a level. And there's really just two statuses that the stock assessment gives us. One is whether or not a stock is overfished, and that's the status of the spawning stock biomass or the big female fish that are out in the water.
Right.
And the other is overfishing, which is kind of the verb or the activity of removals. And right now the status is overfished, meaning there's not enough females by their standard that they set as managers. And our activity is taking them out of the water too quickly, which means overfishing is occurring. That triggers action. And again, 18% less fish need to leave the water coastwide in 2020, based on the analysis that the technical folks have done. And it's so hard, and that's where a lot of the angst comes from, where folks say, hey, well, I'm not making as big of an impact as those folks, cut them, not us. And
sure.
And that's what those public meetings are all about, the review.
A lot of finger pointing at the meeting, wasn't there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. And it's folks have called fisheries management or any wildlife management the tragedy of the commons. You know, it's something that we all hold in common and share as a public resource, and we ask our great folks at Maryland DNR and these other agencies to manage it. And unfortunately, they have to manage us too, and it's difficult.
Exactly. It is a difficult species to manage because of the demands on the species. No questions. No question.
It's just like one of the old fisheries managers that used to work at DNR said something that always stuck with me. He said, you know, counting fish is just like counting trees, except for you can't see them, and they move.
Yes, exactly.
Like counting trees at all.
Exactly. One of the former crab managers said, it's like trying to manage a bunch of bugs crawling on the bottom of the bay. So, yep. You know, there you go. All right, Dave. Look, we got to take a break. Hang with us here for a little bit. We'll talk a little further if you would. Is all right?
Thank you.
All right. Let's talk about Chesapeake Outdoors. Chesapeake Outdoors is located on Kent Island, right across the Bay Bridge. And if you're going over there sometime, you get off the Bay Bridge, and it's not far until you get to exit 39B Dominion Road. And you'll see the X on there on the right. You turn there on exit 39B. And go right around into the parking lot of Chesapeake Outdoors. It's very easy to get to. Easy in, easy out. Easy in and off of 50. On and off of 50. The first choice for Eastern Shore hunters and anglers is Chesapeake Outdoors. Let me give you a few things. The muzzleloader season's right around the corner, and they're stocked and ready with premium muzzleloaders from Thompson Center and CVA, our sponsor of our muzzleloader giveaway here today. They do carry Remington and Chapa Firearms and others. They carry Costa sunglasses, Yeti coolers, and a large selection of waterfowl calls, decoys, steel shot, gear, camouflage apparel for all seasons, deer and waterfowl, thousands of accessories for muzzleloaders and firearms and bows and arrows. And they carry the Matthews brand compound bows. They carry the Mission crossbows, the Raven crossbows, and a clearance sale on Hoyt. They also carry 10-point Excalibur, Carbon Express, and Barnett crossbows. So when you walk in, you'll see a whole array of crossbows hanging from the ceiling. So why not stop by Chesapeake Outdoors? Their phone number is 410-604-2500. Thousands of accessories, hundreds of thousands of accessories, and also tree stands, too. Check it out. 410-604-2500. Pick up a Chesapeake Outdoors t-shirt while you're there. 410-604-2500 is Chesapeake Outdoors. Alan Ellis here for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie spray-on bedliners. Linex spray-on bedliners rated number one, carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, your crabbing and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex premium bedliner or the Linex Extra. Both look great. And Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck, step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards. You get it. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex spray-on bedliner, truck gear, and accessories. Catonsville Linex, new location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill, just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford, 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Linex. I want to talk about shotguns. We got early duck season coming up here. The A5 is the most reliable, fastest cycling, best balanced, and softest shooting recoil-operated autoloader on the planet. It has a recoil-operated kinematic drive system. It's an autoloader, like I said, semi-automatic. It comes in Mossy Oak Shadowgrass Blades style DuraTouch camo, a fiber optic front sight. It's got that humpback receiver that harkens back to the old days, and it's ergonomically balanced. It is a extremely comfortable shotgun to shoot. 100,000 rounds and 5-year guarantee. Now let's talk about the Maxis for the waterfowlers. This is another autoloader. It has a power drive gas system that reduces recoil. It comes in 3 and 3.5 inch chambers. It also comes in Mossy Oak camo. And if you throw one or the other of these Browning shotguns to your shoulder, if you're a waterfowl hunter, you're going to like them both. You're going to like them both. You're going to have to flip a coin to see which one you really, really like the best, the Maxis or the A5. And those are available at Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, your full-line Browning dealer. Clyde's has been a Browning dealer since, I don't know, the 60s, I guess. 410-242-6108. Clyde's Sports is the website. Open 7 days a week. All major credit cards, firearms, licenses, ammunition, gunsmithing, and scope mounting available at Clyde's Sports Shop. Switching gears, going to the Eastern Shore. Now, when I'm on Route 50, and I hope to be going down to the Sick of Deer camp here very soon, I hope, when I'm on Route 50 headed to or from the deer stand or the duck blind, my mouth and my little belly, my little round belly, can't wait to stop at Bay Country Bakery for a donut or a sandwich and a fresh cup of hot coffee. I took a picture of their lunch menu the other day when I was in there, I'll talk about that later, maybe. But anyway, Bay Country Bakery in Cambridge, they make the most delicious fresh-baked donuts. Don't they, Chris?
Oh, my gosh, they certainly do.
Which one did you pick?
The first one was a cream. Yeah. That's gone. And then the second one had the crunched-up Oreos on top of it. That's gone. There's three left.
There you go.
They won't last very long.
Nope. Breakfast, was it?
It's an appetizer for breakfast.
Yeah, appetizer for breakfast. Got it. All right. So, I mean, you can get them enough for everyone in camp if you want. They serve a great breakfast, 6 to 11 a.m. Monday through Friday to all day Saturday. Even after your morning hunt from 11 till 2, you can grab a tasty lunch. You can see them today at Crabtoberfest at Sailwinds from, I think, 3 to 9 tonight. They're making Bavarian German pretzels and Bavarian food for that that little German fest thing.
And I'm heading down that way later on today, so I just might have to stop by.
Sailwinds.
Yes.
Crabtoberfest.
Okay.
Yeah, right. German food and beer and music and all that stuff.
I'm there.
Bay Country Bakery. Do what I do. Look for the big donut on the side of the bakery. And Dave and Gina Levy, your host, are trained chefs. They strive to bring you the best. Bay Country Bakery, located 2951 Coastal Highway, just through Cambridge on Route 50 East. Think big donut. Visit their website, like their Facebook page, Bay Country Bakery. Be sure to stop by and say hello. You might see Sparky or me there. Never know. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you. Oh, I have to do something, don't I? I'm going to tell the folks to go to Madonna Seafood and get some great seafood. What do you think of that? Known for having the best seafood in Harford County and northern Baltimore County, Madonna Seafood Restaurant has a great and outstanding menu for lunch or dinner, and then all-you-can-eat crabs. It's a great place for family event or a business meeting at Madonna Seafood, and then they have a carryout, too. Madonna Seafood carryout, steamed crabs by the dozen or the bushel, great seafood, fantastic pizza. They make thousands of pizzas a month, subs, and a whole lot more. Call into the carryout at 410-557-2722. That's 410-557-CRAB. Take exit 27B off the 695 Beltway. That's Delaney Valley Road North, Route 146. Turn left on Norrisville Road. You've arrived at Madonna Seafood. Madonna Seafood, 4105 Norrisville Road in Whitehall, Maryland. 410-557-CRAB. 2722. MadonnaSeafood.com. Madonna Seafood is open every day at 11 a.m. If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Talk Radio 680, WCBM.
But I'll take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not forget about all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones. They're mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade sitting in the shade. Whether it's hot, whether it's cool, oh, what a spot for whistling like a fool. What a fine day to take a stroll and wander by the fishing hole. I can't think of a better way.
We have Dave Sikorsky on the line. Dave is the executive director of the Coastal Conservation Association. Let me ask you a question, Dave. These Gulf Coast anglers in Texas that got the CCA started 40-some years ago, wasn't that kind of in response to the overwhelming popularity of black and redfish at the time?
Absolutely, yeah. Black and redfish, and Chef Paul Prudhomme figured out a way to catch not only to eat the really big red drum, and overfishing just took hold. And so at the time also, some of our country's federal fisheries laws, the Magnuson-Stevens Act is the one that's in place now, and that was passed first in 1976. So,
right.
About the same time, the country was just trying to figure out how to better manage its resources in federal waters. And
right.
Of course, population's boomed ever since, and we have to feed our country. But yeah, the redfish were a big deal. ECA was instrumental in trying to work through management and find ways to better manage the balance between recreational fishing and commercial fishing for redfish and speckled trout. And,
right.
Ultimately, there's very few commercial redfish fisheries left because it's difficult to manage. And there's been some coastal gillnet bans that CCA was involved in the Gulf in those shallow waters, because that's a kind of gear that catches fish indiscriminately, and
right.
Managers failed to manage. So ultimately, CCA is a big part of why we're seeing those big redfish even up here today.
In the Chesapeake Bay, yeah, exactly.
Yes, sir. Their population continues to grow, and they're a very similar animal to a striped bass. Of course, they're a southern species that don't get much further north than about here.
Mm-hmm.
And they're genetically different here in the Atlantic than they are in the Gulf. But they grow slow once they get to mature ages at about 7 or 8 years and 28 inches or so. And they only spawn effectively every so often. They've got to have proper environmental conditions and such. And their little guys, the puppy drum, which we are blessed to have in the Chesapeake every once in a while.
Yep.
They grow fast. They grow in the juvenile stages about twice as fast as a rockfish. So that's why when we get them, you'll catch them sublegal. They'll be mixed in with the spot and the croaker, it seems like any dock in the state you can catch them when they're around. And all of a sudden, a year later, they're
18 inches.
Yeah, they're 18, 20 inches something. They're,
yep.
They're legal all of a sudden, and next thing you know, they're gone.
Yep.
They've aged out and left the bay. So, of course, rockfish continue to be our bread and butter here.
Sure. Sure. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I said, on the radio show, I have a two-word phrase that I use all the time. People say, oh, well, we went to such and such a spot, last week, and we loaded up on those fish. We caught, and then we went back this past week, and we didn't catch a single one, this type of thing. And it's like, when we were in the same spot, I don't understand it. And my explanation for fish management, for, all types of fishing, is very simple. Fish swim, just like you said.
Yep.
It's like counting trees, except, you can't see them and they swim. So, yeah, it's exactly right. So there, the three options on the table, I don't want to get into them now because people can read that whole thing online and comment, but the comment period is now open on the fisheries management plan from the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. But we also heard that DNR is going to take all these numbers, and they're going to go back, and they're going to do what's called conservation equivalency to try and bring about the reduction of 18% of our fish kill here in Maryland, our fish taking. Is that the right word? What's the right word, Dave? What's the right term I'm looking for?
It's what they're trying to do is 18% reduction in removals.
Removals, okay.
Yeah.
And whether that's caught and kept, or a removal can also be a dead fish floating on the surface of the Chesapeake Bay.
That's right, yeah.
That's a removal. If it's dead, it ain't in there. It's been removed from the landscape. Or seascape.
Yeah, the way the managers assess removals for the recreational fishery is they assume, based on some studies, that many agree to probably be better and updated because we never have enough science on this stuff. They assume that 9% of fish that are released alive may die. And they do that in the model, and that's a year-long assumption. We know through some studies that it could be as low as 0.8% if fish are shallow hooked and the water's cold and there's some salinity.
Right.
It could be as high as 30% in the heat of the summer if folks are leaving fish out in the air. I mean, we have to remember they're a cold-blooded animal. When you pull them out in the air, all of a sudden it's that shock and that temperature change between the water temp and the air temp, and it's tough to breathe. And I say to folks all the time, it's like any of us leaving a nice air-conditioned basement and walking out into the heat of late July here in Maryland and hitting that humidity and that 100-degree air. You feel it.
Oh, absolutely. No question.
We can sweat. They can't.
Good point. Fish can't sweat. I like that. I like the way you did that. But the other thing is there's a chemical reaction in the fish's body when it's taken out of the water as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
Is it an increase of nitrogen in the system or something like that? I can't remember what it is, but it's
you're testing my
yeah. Well, let's put it this way: it ain't good for them. How about this? Somebody put a hook in your jaw, rip it out, and then submerge you underwater for 30 seconds or a minute. You're going to get uncomfortable. And if you're out long enough, you may not survive. If you're under long enough, you may not survive. Just reverse that for a fish, because that's how they die.
So. Exactly. I tell folks all the time, if you wonder how long you can hold a fish out of the water, why don't you hold your breath as soon as you pull it out and think about what that fish is going through. And, of course, fishing is meant to bring home some dinner.
Oh, yeah, no question.
But as recreation also, we got to be responsible. And as people kind of debate catch and release, like when should we do it, when shouldn't we do it, I continue to ask people, well, how do we guarantee we don't catch an undersized fish or a fish that is not legal to keep, and then we must release it? And so I fish a lot. I think I'm a pretty decent angler, and I catch undersized fish all the time. And
sure.
So I remind people that the answer to that is to teach ourselves the best techniques, be prepared, never handle them with a dry towel. If you can get by with it, never touch the fish at all. Use the de-hooker and try and get it back into the water as fast as possible, and just be prepared. We owe it to the resource to be responsible stewards of it and participants.
One of the easiest things to do is to press down the barb on the hook.
Yep.
One of the easiest things to do. You don't have to change anything else. And yet that allows you to release that fish quicker because you don't have that barb cutting against the flesh. The fish doesn't fight the barb. The fish fights the bend in the hook. If you keep pressure on that fish, he's fighting the bend because he can't back up over that bend in the hook. Okay. The barb is on there. And can you even buy barbless hooks? I don't even know if you can. But
you know, there are some. But
not specifically for striped bass or for the type of fishing we do here, I don't believe. But
no. There's artificial, when you're using artificial lures or actively retrieving, jigging or such, or even trolling with artificial lures, the fish are much more likely to be hooked shallow in their mouth,
right,
or around their structure. And that's a big part of why DNR enacted a regulation to use circle hooks
for bait.
Mm-hmm. No question. The fish shallow hooked. And circle hooks are never perfect. I mean, they're very different, depending on which company's making them. There's no exact standard in the industry. So it's challenging to figure out which ones are best. And not every fish, a circle hook doesn't hook every fish the same way. If you
right.
think about marlin, folks, they regulated circle hook use years ago in fishing tournaments, and the white marlin community especially, out of Ocean City, Maryland, I mean, they gravitate towards circle hooks completely and use them almost exclusively now. And it took a while for folks to get used to it. And the same thing's happening with striped bass. And there's many species in the Gulf that are required. If you're bait fishing, you must use a circle hook. So it's going to take a little while for anglers to get used to it. It's never going to be perfect. There's some different techniques there, but it's the best way to shallow hook the fish so that if you already have your limit or it's a fish that's not legal, or you're not choosing to keep it that day, you can release it and have a higher likelihood of that fish surviving.
Yep, got it. All right. Dave, we want to kind of wrap this up a little bit. You want to tell us a little bit about your CCA tournaments and that type of thing, and we'll get you back here sometime to talk about more things, maybe on the 25th anniversary. I know, you know, you're big into habitat and reefs and things like that, but I'd like to save the last segment for the folks to call in on the muzzleloader contest in our final break.
Absolutely.
So, closing remarks.
Yeah, so like I mentioned in the opening, the CCA does some fishing tournaments, and we partner with many throughout the state throughout the year. The way we're doing one right now, it's called the Rocktober Cup. So we refer to October as Rocktober, and after this cold front, these fish are going to be putting the feed bag on, getting ready.
No question.
It's time for those topwater plugs to come out, these fish are going to get active. So Rocktober is a derby-style fishing tournament we have active right now. It started October 1st. Folks can sign up at any time by going to our website, ccamd.org, /Rocktober, will take you directly to the tournament. And we use some really neat technology called iAngler Tournament. This has been very popular in the kayak bass world and many tournaments throughout the country. You use your smartphone,
yep,
take a fish against the ruler.
Yep.
And because rockfish are in decline, we're requiring that you release the fish that you enter into the tournament. Want you to especially release the bigger fish, and a lot of times they're the breeders. But there's lots of different ways to win in the Rocktober Cup. We're awarding random prizes for invasive species, and we've got a perch division, a youth division. So you definitely want to check that out. And we're also promoting that folks go out there and pick up trash. It's the Rocktober Cup and Trash Tour.
Got it.
We all been by the shore and seen some stuff that other folks have left. And it's nice to be responsible and pick up some trash. So if you do that and send us a picture of the trash you picked up in the app, you win some prizes as well from our great friends at Coastal Sunglasses and their Kick Plastic campaign.
Nice. What's the app again?
iAngler Tournament.
iAngler Tournaments, and we look at CCA, is there a way to direct us to the CCA thing, or is that just a part of it?
Yes, ccamd.org/Rocktober will take you directly to an explanation of the tournament and a link to the iAngler page, and also on our Facebook, Coastal Conservation Association Maryland.
Okay. Hey, we do have a guest who wants to ask you a question, Pete and Severin. Hang on a minute. There you go. Hey, Pete, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing great. Good to hear your guest and you this morning. I have a couple questions. We went fishing on the Wye River this past week. We haven't done it for the last couple weeks and did well one time. The water was real high and the wind was blowing, but we were catching an awful lot of really small white perch. Are there still netters at the mouth of like the Wye River catching all the big ones as they're going out? What's the story with that?
It's probably never that simple. I think there are some netters that operate on white perch, and I know there are fish that as weather transitions and things change, the different size classes will be in different parts of the river. So there's never a situation in the bay where any one group's taking all of a certain size or anything. There can definitely be kind of a localized impact, but unfortunately, I don't have the exact details of who's operating where. White perch are so abundant. I think sometimes the big ones just might be hanging out in the school and not biting, to be honest.
Okay. Yeah, we caught a tremendous amount of small ones. I was fishing for rock last week. We got our limit, and this week couldn't find one. The water was high, the wind, I don't know what it was. Does high water affect them? Do they go further back up into coves?
Absolutely. I mean, they're like us. They're going to be where they're comfortable, and it's going to change day to day. They're going to be near a food source, near proper water quality conditions. And actually, there's a really great tool that anglers should know about that Maryland DNR has put together called Click Before You Cast. And it's part of their Eyes on the Bay program. And so what they've done is taken water quality conditions and meteorological conditions and helped anglers understand, before you go fishing, why don't you check out this website and walk through all the different conditions that might exist. And so it'll help lead towards not only educating you to understand what impacts the different weather patterns have, but also where you're most likely to find fish because of maybe different water quality conditions, oxygen levels, or other things. We have these algae blooms and everything else that affect these fish.
That is a fantastic program, Dave. And Pete, I appreciate the questions. Join CCA, Pete, and you'll get a lot of insight into this process. And
later this morning.
Yeah, do that. And sorry to kind of cut you short a little bit, but we have got to move on.
Next week.
Okay, do that, Pete. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
and Dave,
thanks to both of you, Dave. Bye.
All right, thank you. All right, Dave. Thank you so much for your input today, and we'll get you back again.
All
Absolutely.
One of these days, if it's not after a banquet, we'll get you in studio and you can, you know, relax and see how we do things here.
Sounds good, and we'll also have to get out on the water.
I'll be glad to do that.
Sounds great.
All right. Care. Thanks, Dave. See you, buddy. Bye-bye. There he goes. All right. Wow. I hope you enjoyed that. I did. I thought that was a very fascinating conversation with Dave. Of course, I've known Dave for quite a while, and Dave is, as some people would say, a maniac on a mission with our fisheries here in Maryland.
So, a wealth of knowledge.
That, too. And he does his homework, and he's a good dude. So, hey, here's what I want to tell you about. There's a gun out there called the X-Bolt, Hell's Canyon. If I buy another rifle, it's probably going to be this one. It comes in three different models, the Speed, the Long Range, and the McMillan model. All of them look a little different, but all of them have that arid urban camouflage, a Dura-Touch finish on the stock, which means you're not going to get fingerprints and on stuff on it. It's got a Cerakote finish, fluted sporter barrel with a threaded muzzle brake, detachable rotary magazine, a short throw bolt, adjustable trigger, and it's a bolt-action rifle from Browning and Clyde Sport Shop, the X-Bolt Hell's Canyon. Take a look at this if you're in the market for a rifle. It might be the last rifle you'll ever buy or ever need. It comes in a variety of calibers, including, 6.5 Creedmoor and more. The Hell's Canyon X-Bolt at Clyde Sports Shop, your full-line Browning dealer, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. That phone number, 410-242-6108. Firearms, licenses, ammunition, gunsmithing, and scope mounting, all at Clyde's Sports Shop this hunting season. Now look, you're headed to the Eastern Shore. There's a place I'd like you to stop. Allow yourself a few minutes extra to stop at Chesapeake Outdoors. When you walk in, fishing's on the left, hunting's on the right, and you will be amazed at the variety of stuff there. When you look up in the ceiling to the right, you're going to see a whole bunch of crossbows, and those are by 10-point, Excalibur, Carbon Express, and Barnett. You'll see the racks and racks of archery bows, compound bows, mostly Matthews. Mostly Matthews, including the new Vertix, which is the hot one this year, and it's got some good advantages to it that you won't see on every other bow. You'll see some Hoyt bows on clearance. Yeah, about 7 or 8 of those left on the rack, too. Take a look at the Mission crossbow, the Sub 1 XR, one of the most accurate crossbows out there, and then the Raven R26 and R29. Very compact, very powerful crossbows. So, make sure you're ready to go on your next adventure. Custom arrows, bow tuning, and accessories. Pete Morris, our buddy, will take care of fixing your bow up and setting it up for you. Camouflage apparel, Costa sunglasses, Yeti coolers, Thompson Center and CVA muzzle loaders, and everything for waterfowl. Chesapeake Outdoors, exit 39B off Route 50, Ken Island, Route 39B, exit 39B, that's Dominion Road. And you can give them a call at 410-604-2500, 604-2500.
Well, a marked cool down in store for the Mid-Atlantic, the Northeast, the Southeast. Everyone finally enjoying a more October feel to the weather forecast. We were in the 40s last night. 67 degrees our high today. Crisp, cool college football Saturday ahead. And upper 50s for tonight. Mostly cloudy Sunday, a high of 76, and we could see some showers Monday with temps in the mid to upper 70s, lows in the 50s. I'm meteorologist Scott Laurie, more from the Weather Channel for Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
This is Alan Ellis for Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex spray-on bedliners. Linex spray-on bedliners are rated number 1 and carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, crabbing, and hunting gear can't hurt it. Choose the Linex Premium or the Linex Extra. Both look great. Bay Linex and Catonsville Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, you get it. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex bedliner and truck gear accessories. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. 410-789-0199. 410-789-0199. Catonsville Line-X, new location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill, just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford. 410-455-0800, 410-455-0800, Line-X. Hey, despite what you think of the singer by the same name, Madonna Seafood does have great food and great service, and the best seafood in Harford County, as well as Northern Baltimore County, I must say. Madonna Seafood Restaurant offers an outstanding menu for lunch or dinner and all-you-can-eat crabs. It's a great place for a family event or business meeting. Madonna Seafood Carryout has steamed crabs to offer by the dozen up to the bushel. Great seafood, you know, steamed shrimp and all that stuff. Pizza, like you wouldn't believe. They have some fantastic pizza and subs, too. A whole lot more. Call in to carry out at 410-557-2722. That's 557-CRAB. Take exit 27B off the 695 Beltway. That's Delaney Valley Road North. 146 is the route number. Turn left on Norrisville Road about, you know, just after you cross the Harford County line, and you've arrived at Madonna Seafood right there. I mean, you can't go any further on Delaney Valley. You just turn left. There it is. Madonna Seafood, 4105 Norrisville Road in Whitehall, Maryland, 410-557-CRAB, 2722. MadonnaSeafood.com. Madonna Seafood, open every day at 11.
W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg has taken care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything, their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
Talk Radio 680 WCPM.
Your hands start shaking, your heart gets to pumping, your knees get to knocking, and your mind starts racing.
What happened to Chris Evans?
It's a feeling like you never felt before. Have you coming back for more? Buck fever, gonna get you, boy. Buck fever, have you praying to the Lord. That rap, that grunt, that stare, that stomp will make you a believer. And buck fever.
Yeah. I've had that a couple times. I know people that suffer badly from that. Let's talk to Captain Don at Stony Beach. Hey, Don.
Hey. Good morning. How are you?
You had that catfish fever. Your hands start shaking, your heart starts pumping, and your knees start knocking.
And my little light rod starts bending. I love it.
I hear you.
Is your guest still with us?
Nope.
Oh, gosh.
Well, what did you want to ask him?
I woke up late.
Yeah, you did. Too bad.
I want to get his view on how Maryland measures up to the other states that are involved with this rockfish management situation. And again, what I've heard from many, many sources is that Maryland is probably at the top. They are the leader, and the other states are not doing their part, so we have to suffer.
Well, I don't know if that part is true, but I do know that Maryland is the leader in striped bass management, no question about it. Now, what's been done to the Fisheries Service under the current administration is sad. But, you know, that being said, these scientists and biologists and even the folks in the, you know, in the service do absolutely above and beyond the call of duty. They don't just go to work and, you know, sit at their office and twiddle their thumbs. These folks are in the field. They're on the phone. They're on their computers. They're in the midst of the management thing because, you know, look, we got the most complicated fishery here in the Chesapeake Bay you can ever imagine. We've got the spawning grounds for the bulk of the population of striped bass in the world. Okay. Right here in the Chesapeake Bay. So water quality is number one, paramount. Okay. But the monitoring of the species for recreational, you know, 500,000 anglers and about 800 charter boat, about 800 commercial fishermen and 400 charter boat captains, all targeting the same species, you know, from March through December. And I mean, it's a Herculean task, if I said that correctly.
Herculean.
Yes, it is. It is a task that is almost beyond compare. And look, they're so short staffed. They're overwhelmed. Everybody in the department's overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. You know, well, and it's sad that it is like that. But I will tell you, I've been in the field with some of these biologists and stuff, and they work their butts off.
Everything I've heard, you're right on 100%. My only question would be the gathering of data from the recreational folks. I think that may be a weak link.
It is, because it's like herding cats. Yep. Recreational anglers aren't going to stop fishing, go on their phone and sign into a website and say, we hooked 43 fish today. We released 38 of them. We kept four, and we don't know how many died. We don't know how many got hooked. We don't know how many. You know, they're not going to do that. Recreational anglers are out to catch fish. That's it. That's all they want to do. They want to catch their fish. They want to go home and clean them and, you know, pop a cold one, and we're done. No interest in fisheries management. And I'm being hard on my brethren out there, but that's true.
And they also like to tell fish stories.
That's true. They do. That's true. Yeah,
that's right.
I like to tell fish stories and deer stories.
Yeah, me too.
Yep,
I think the CCA is doing a great job, but I know there's other people.
There's other groups, no question. No question. Other groups. And you know what? Not everyone is right, and not everyone is completely wrong. So, you know.
Yep.
But, you know, hey, they're doing something.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Yep.
Well.
Anyway.
Put me in the contest, please.
You're in. From what I understand, you're in. You're our last entry of the day.
Take care.
Anybody wants to enter online can also do that as well. My email address is ellis@ellisoutdoors. Put in your subject line ML contest, muzzleloader contest, so that I know that I can pull your name and address off of your email, along with your phone number. Name, address, and phone number, ellis@ellisoutdoors.com. Thanks, Captain Don. Sorry.